Thanks for tuning in to Christian Medical and Dental Association's chapel. May the message be a blessing to you.
I want to talk this morning about the 10 laws of effective group functioning. It's interesting, I first spoke on this probably in the 90s somewhere, and the other day I found this dot matrix piece of paper that you could barely read, and I thought, maybe God's got that there for a purpose. I'm going to talk about that with CMDA. Let's turn our minds back to Ephesians 2, 19 through 22. Now, therefore, you are no more strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and of the household of God, and are built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone, in whom all the building fitly framed together grows unto a holy temple in the Lord, in whom ye also are builded together for the habitation of God through the Spirit. I didn't know there was such a word as builded, but that's what was in that version. What it's talking about here is us being fellow citizens, God's people, also being part of his family, of the household of faith. And you know, the most powerful thing on earth is a group of people that are well disciplined and trying to accomplish a common end. Nothing's more potent than a group unbreakably giving to each other and unreservedly giving to God. And you look back in history and you can see how groups are. It was only a handful of German Nazis and a handful of Italy fascists who took over their countries and caused a war that spread around the world. In 1914, someone said, if you could find two communists in Paris, it would be a wonder, and if you could find four, it'd be a miracle. And Paris was the place where communism was actually birthed. You probably didn't know that. 3 years later, communists took over Russia, and they've challenged the whole world. Small group. Less than 100 people produced the Reformation. Less than 10 key people produced the Federal Union of America. They were the key people that had the vision and started motivating others. This topic actually comes from a famous missionary, E. Stanley Jones. You've probably never heard of him. He lived from 1884 to 1973. I heard more about him when I was younger because he was a graduate of Asbury College in 1907. And he served in India as a missionary and started what were called ashrams, which were forced retreats where they would bring Hindus along with Christians and to study in depth their own spiritual natures and their quest. And it was an extremely effective form of evangelism. He was a very prominent person in India. He was a friend of Mahatma Gandhi. He was a friend of Nehru, the first president. In fact, during World War II, Franklin Roosevelt used him as an unofficial ambassador to work with the Japanese. He was nominated for a Nobel Prize. He won the Gandhi Peace Prize. I mean, the list just goes on and on. He wrote a wonderful book, many wonderful books, but the first one, Christ of the Indian Road, in 1926, sold over 1 million copies. That's before Facebook, social media. Pretty impressive. And these 10 commandments were the ones he used as he opened his ashrams, talking to these people from a very diverse, different backgrounds, different belief systems, different customs. But they apply to all of us that are part of a group, like we are here at CMDA, where we're working with other people towards a common goal, to win healthcare professionals to Christ and to disciple them to reach others. But you know what, a problem that's always common with a group? With what? Getting along with each other. Getting along with each other. Now, I don't know anything going on here, so just relax. I stay out of stuff. But I think these laws of effective functioning are kind of like the oil in your car, the grease in your wheel hubs, they make sure things are going to work smoothly and help you accomplish your goals and be more effective in reaching the common goal. Number one is this: acquire and cultivate the power to put yourself in the other person's place. E. Stanley Jones called this imaginative sympathy. Imaginative sympathy. You can imagine yourself in the other person's place. And he used to say it was the key to life. It's the secret of God's power over us, isn't it? Because God, what? Suffered with us through Jesus Christ. And he understands what we've gone through from his humanness. Matthew 25:32 says, "For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat." That's imaginative sympathy as Christ is speaking. "I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in." To the degree we can acquire and cultivate that ability of imaginative sympathy, can we get along with other people and be like Christ? He did this, and we should. And, you know, when things aren't going well, or there's a little acrimony between you and someone else, or someone doesn't treat you right, imagining what they may be going through can really make a difference. But the ability to put yourself in the other person's place, and sometimes you don't even know what their place is, but give them the benefit of the doubt to understand that, yeah, maybe they had a bad day. Maybe they had a fight with their husband or wife this morning, or maybe the kids are acting up. Really helps you deal with the situation that you're dealing with right now, cultivating that power to put yourself in their place. Number two, determined to hold no secret criticism of each other. Isn't that interesting? No secret criticism. Often we think things that we don't say to the person we're thinking them about. Oftentimes we may say it to other people in not a nice way. E. Stanley Jones said this for fellowship in his ashrams: "Fellowship is based on confidence. Secret criticism breaks that confidence. Therefore, we will renounce all secret criticism." You can imagine what it was like bringing people from such very different backgrounds together and different religions and trying to talk to them. And so this is important in any group, but and even here at CMDA, because you really can't fellowship with someone if you've been talking behind their back, can you? The key is, why not talk to the person about it or just cut the criticism? If there's something that is significant that you need to deal with, your duty as a Christian is to sit down, find an opportunity to go out to lunch or whatever, and just sit down and say, "I have this concern," and deal with it. Because if not, you know what criticism is? It's a cancer. It only grows. And as you share it, it metastasizes to other people. And at the same time, you welcome constructive criticism. Maybe somebody's critical of you, and you need to be on the receiving end to understand things that need to be straightened out. It may be just said something that was said and misunderstood. It may be something real that needs to be dealt with. But to have good relationships, there's got to be open communication, trust, and the ability to not hold things in secret but deal with them if you're going to function well with the group. Number three, don't expect perfection from other people. Often we expect too much. Remember, you have to get along with yourself in spite of yourself, so you make up your mind to get along with others in spite of themselves. Because none of us are perfect. Romans 3:23, we have all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And we continue to make mistakes. We continue to do things that may be inappropriate or say things or not live up to someone's expectations. It's true with your kids as well. You can have such high expectations. I've been around parents like this that they're just constantly criticizing their children because they expect perfection out of them. We have our granddaughter with us right now. She is not perfect. She's demonstrated that a number of times. She's a lovely child, but it's just the nature of human beings, and it's true in the workplace. We may have very high standards for ourselves, but other people don't have the same standard in that area as you do. So it's easy to hold others to higher standards than we even hold ourselves. And we don't measure ourselves very accurately sometimes. So set an example, be as good as you can at what you do and what you say and how you act, but realize everyone's not perfect. And then at the same time, encourage others as they excel, as they improve, as you see changes in their life. Wow, I was out this week on Monday fishing with my financial advisor, and he took us out to dinner the night before, and then we were talking, we went back to the house, looked over and said, man, you've been working out, haven't you? Wow, yeah, he had been. And he just lit up because I noticed that he had been perfecting himself in an area. And he talked about going to the Y 5 out of 7 days a week. So, yeah, don't expect perfection, and then let people know you appreciate the efforts they're making. Number four, look on others not as they are, but as they can be. Look on others not as they are, but as they can be. If you've watched The Chosen, and I've thought most of you have, those disciples really had issues, almost every one of them. And yet Jesus saw what they could be. They could change the world. And he spent time with them, and he admonished them, and he taught them, and he sometimes corrected them. That was his secret of influence, and it's the same with us. It's Jesus' secret influence on us as people in this day and time. He believed in disciples when they couldn't believe in themselves, and we should do that with other people. You won't despair of other people if you have a constructive expectation of what they can be. My dad, one of my favorite things that I share is my dad used to say, the greatest investment of man or woman's life is to invest in other people. And as you work with others, you invest in them. They're watching you, you're watching them. If it's somebody you're supervising, one of your staff, or your children, or your mate, or whatever, see what they can be. And sometimes that takes time. Susan's not here, Susan Carter, but I'll make an example of her. And I know Becky will tell her that, no, but anyway. But I remember Susan and I worked very closely together. She had been on furlough when we arrived on the field. And then she came back, and she didn't want to do everyday nursing. She had this vision for doing community health, and there were only 6 nurses in the hospital, and to send one of them off to do something different was going to increase workloads for everybody. They were on night call for OB, night call for the hospital, just like the doctors were. And so they set her aside, and Susan had never done anything public health, neither had I, and Ernie made me the director. But I'd had more experience in supervising people than she had. And I remember the first day that we had 4 community health supervisors, people we had taken from the hospital. We were going to train them to do this. They had no formal training. And I was talking about good practices, and you sit down, have the annual assessment, and talk to the person. I can still remember Susan sitting there. I'm sitting off to the side of the desk. I could see her hands are dripping sweat. Dripping sweat. And I had talked about how to do this and tried to model. She had watched me and all the rest of it because I knew it was something important for her to learn. Little did I know that 15 years later, she was going to be leading the whole hospital and 400 staff. But I saw that potential. Dr. Sturie saw that potential. And we began to work towards developing her capabilities. The only thing you're going to take to heaven with you is other people. How are you helping them in their walk with Christ? How are you helping them in the workplace? How are you helping with their family life? How are you touching their lives to help them become what God designed them to be? And all of us have influence, whether it's over our children or people that we know, and we should use that influence to help them become all that they can be. Hebrews 11:1, now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. We can have faith in people to say, yes, we can develop them. I think some of the greatest satisfaction in all my career is the people I've had the opportunity to influence and see them become what God had designed them to be. The Bible teaches us to hope more and expect less. And that's especially true in the workplace as we work with other people. Number 5. Determined to settle differences as they arise. Don't let them fester. You know what that word fester mean? That's an old word. To cause increasing poisoning, irritation, and bitterness. And when you have a difference, a criticism, or somebody's done something that's wrong, it will fester if you don't deal with it. It'll grow. That's true in your marriage. If you don't deal with issues or with other people you know, before long it's going to be poison. It's going to be such irritation and bitterness you don't even want to be around them any longer. Most misunderstandings can be solved easily by quick action. The longer you let them go, the more they fester. Matthew 5:25, agree with your adversary quickly while on the way with him. This is true in family feuds. Some of you have experienced that. I've experienced it. Unexpected things happened. I don't know what the deal was with family members. And we had to dig in it and try to figure out what was going on and deal with individuals right away. Determined to settle differences as they arise, don't let them fester. And that's true in the workplace as well. It's poison in a group when people don't want to be with each other, work with each other, and are irritated by each other. Number six, refuse to look for slights. Because if you look for them, you will find them. None of us are perfect. Especially, there's going to cause problems when you haven't settled the difference before. It's easy to get a chip on your shoulder. You know what a chip on your shoulder is? Somebody's done something, and they didn't do their part of the work. They left early today. I don't know. There's a thousand things it could be. And they left me worth the work. And so what happens with a chip on your shoulder? You're looking for something else to prove how you feel about them. So you overreact. You can become anaphylactic. You know that word? That's when you have anaphylaxis, is when you're allergic to something and all of a sudden your blood pressure drops and you get faint and all the rest of it, and you swell up. That can happen in relationships because you're looking for something to prove what you think about this person is true. Bible talks about that, Matthew 7:3. Why do you look for the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? The key to avoid slights bothering you is what? Having a greater purpose. And we have a greater purpose here at CMDA that absorbs your attention so that you will not actually notice when you are slighted. If you're focused on what God wants you to do in this situation and now, then you just let these things go, because you are focused on the goal that's really important. Having a share in shaping the world is much more important than your private happenings. Private happenings. A lot of things you just need to duck, like water off a duck's back. When I'm teaching missionaries, I get in on this point, and I have this picture of a duck with water flowing off his back, and sometimes you just need to duck, or sometimes be like a duck. Just ignore it. Don't pay attention to it. Just keep going. And then just let it roll off your back like water off a duck's back. My grandfather, favorite expression, I'd heard him say many times, he'd say, somebody come up to him and say, so-and-so's talking about you. He'd say, well, when they're gossiping about me, they're leaving somebody else alone. Just let it flow off his back. And no big deal. Number seven, look for privileges of service, not for your rights. It says not for slights. That's a typo. Not your rights. I'm working more than so-and-so. They're not carrying their load. The bottom line is we don't have any rights in God. We, as Christians, we give up our rights. And 1 Corinthians 9:19, for though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant of all, that I might win more of them. Paul saying to us, yeah, I don't have any rights. I'm a servant of everyone. In fact, that word translates as slave. And in the workplace, it's easy to get irritated because, well, they're just not treating me right. I'm not getting what I deserve. Romans 2:10, be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Those verses taken to heart can make enormous difference in a group. Number eight, help others to help themselves. Don't smother them by being over anxious to help. That gets back to what we talked about, being a maker of men and women. You fertilize, you water, you weed those you work with and supervise, and then you see them develop. But you don't smother them. It's easy to do this with kids. You can keep them so tight to you that they never can grow up because they don't have any experiences. You've got to give people an opportunity to fail and then help them. And the only thing that if you don't do that, they'll never become what God designed them to be. I remember when I was in college, in medical school, and I was in my office looking at my commentaries the other day, and here in the front of the book, Barclay's Commentaries to Dave, 1974, it was my Christmas gift, gave me a whole set of commentaries. I'll be very frank with you, I didn't read much of those during medical school. But they saw that where I was headed and what I needed to do. Then I remember the day that Dad invited me to go with him to a mission conference while I was in medical school up in Pennsylvania. He says, I want you to speak to the youth. What was he doing? He was putting me out there, not smothering me, but putting me in a situation where I was going to mature. And then we got up there and he said, why don't you just preach on Sunday? I never preached on Sunday in church in my life. I was scared to death. But what he was doing was helping me develop, and not smothering me, looking for opportunities, realizing where I was going, what I was going to need to do. That's what we need to do with the people that we work with, especially those that we supervise. Do that with your family. That's a group function. And give them the opportunity. I remember when Stacy was in high school, I had all the kids go somewhere on the mission field other than Kenya with me. And I was trying to figure out what we'd do with her. She came to me and said, Dad, I just heard about this opportunity, and I said, what's that? To go to South America. I started looking into it. She was going to live with a family that only spoke Spanish. There's one lady that spoke some English, and she was gone to school every day. She went down there for 3 months. A lot of parents wouldn't have done that. Don't smother them by being over-anxious to help. You've got to help people develop, and you've got to let them go. Number 9, remember, as Paul said, we are organs for one another. 1 Corinthians 12:14. So the body is not made of one part of many. We're not all going to be alike. We're all not alike. And I'm glad you're not like me. There's not enough room when I was here for more than one of me. And I had my talents and my abilities, and you had yours, and we complement each other just like different organs of the body. You may be the eye, and I may be the feet. Our skills complement. God has brought us here. He's using us together, and that is what he's designed. And remember, they've got their part. You've got yours. I enjoy people. I like people, but I'm not gregarious. I think of Ron Brown. Ron's never met a stranger, and he stays in contact with everybody. Burt Jones is the same way. Where's Burt? Every time I see him on Facebook, he's got pictures of new people. He's a people person. He's much better in that area than I am. I enjoy people. I'm happy to be with them, but I don't go on Facebook. I don't communicate with a lot of people just to keep up with them. Every one of us is different. And God brings that into an organization and makes it effective and uses us. So you may have the organ of influencing others. You may have the organ of executive ability. You might have the gift of helps. Remember, Fred Wright's at work with my dad. Fred was always helping people. When we moved from Wilmore to medical school after we got married, he got his van, he moved us up there. That was just the kind of person he was. He always looked for that. And remember, we're organs for one another. And finally, keep your power of laughter. Practice laughter. Someone said, when things get tense, break out in laughter on general principles. Laughter is the lubrication of an organization, of a group. Jody and I were walking with got my daughter's dog now, so you see if the two dogs, and we were talking as we were walking the other day, and Dale Willis came up. many of you know Dale Willis, some of you new ones don't. He was a board member, dentist here in town. Most of us used him as a dentist. And we were just talking about Dale's laughter. You could hear him down the hallway. I can still hear it as he came. He'd sit down and spend, you wonder how he got his work done. Sit down, spend 10, 15 minutes with you talking, asking about your family, laughing, just having a good time. I looked at Jody and I said, you know, we know a lot of people have died, but we don't think about him as we think about Dale because of that power of laughter that he had and his service to other people. And laughter really lubricates things. Matthew 18:20, for where two or three together in my name, there I'm in the midst of them. Those are things we need to remember about group life as we think about how can we've got a great organization here, but how can we make it even better? How can we take out some of the friction if it exists? How can we help other people become all God's designed them to be? Group activities must be organized around an overriding purpose and be committed towards concrete objectives and not hazy ideas. You remember the Magi? They were into stargazing. They came to the cradle. They gave homage. They returned home. And we never heard of them again, at least in the Bible. But group life, where we're focused on that overriding purpose together and draw close together to make it happen, really accomplishes a lot. We know from experience that the things that destroy are disunity. They destroy organizations, destroy relationships, destroy ministries. My prayer is that each person here will be bound together with you as the center, the glue that holds us together, and that we may practice these principles each day. In your Son's name, amen.